Approaching the end of high school can be really exciting. After 12 or 13 years of required schooling, you have an open field of choices. You hope you do anyway. The options people get for life after high school vary greatly by individual and by where the individual goes to high school. The author Jeff Hobbs demonstrates this in the book Show Them You're Good, a portrait of boys in the City of Angels the year before college. The book focuses on four young men, two each in two very different high schools in the Los Angeles area. Two attended a charter school in South L.A., the other two attended Beverly Hills High School. Now, Jeff Hobbs is a Los Angeles-based writer, obviously. His previous books are The Tourists and The Short and Tragic Life of Robert Peace, which won the L.A. Times Book Prize and has been cast for a movie. Jeff Hobbs, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Riley. I'm so grateful to be here with you.
Glad to have you. It seems at the outset that there are some similar contours with the story of Robert Peace. Can you flesh that out a bit?
Sure. The Short and Tragic Life of Robert Peace is a book about a very close friend of mine, my roommate for 4 years in college, who died in 2011. And it's just a story. He grew up, you know, the hard way, about as hard as you can. His father was in prison for murder. His mom worked very long hours for not much money. And he went to Yale and then, you know, things didn't turn out very well. But, a lot of that book is about coming of age and male friendship and fathers and sons. So a lot of those themes are kind of a bridge into this book, which is about kids going through their senior year in high school. And as you said, two very different neighborhoods in Los Angeles during the 16-17 school year.
So we have the two high schools here, then Animo Pat Brown Charter High School and Beverly Hills High School. I think we can kind of guess these are two very different places.
Pretty different, yeah. They're about 20 miles apart, but, you know, a lot farther in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Certainly an income of the neighborhoods, I would think.
Very much so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you did tons of interviews. How did you decide on the young men on whom to focus the story, primarily Tio, Carlos, John, and Owen?
Sure. Well, another kind of bridge between the book about Robert Peace and this book had to do when Robert Peace came out. Something very terrifying happened, which is a lot of schools began asking me to come visit and talk to assemblies and visit classes. And you can probably already tell after 5 minutes that I was never meant to speak in public or really speak in general. But I did, and I got to visit all these schools, from Ivy League schools to juvenile halls all across the country. And a lot of it was just, you know, young people standing up and telling their own stories. So I sort of carried that home and thought about writing a book about what it looks like and feels like to be 18 years old in America right now. And I started reaching out to schools in Los Angeles where I live, just because I'm sort of a full-time dad with young kids, and I can't travel or anything. And most principals don't want a journalist wandering around their hallways, you know.
Right.
Schools get dinged a lot by journalists. But these two schools, Animo Pat Brown, I'll call it APB, and Beverly Hills, I knew some teachers there, and they had faith that I was trying to do something positive, and so they let me. They sort of opened their doors for me. And as far as these specific individuals, these four boys who are men now, they're going into their senior years in college right now. I guess sort of an email was sent to the student body saying that this kind of awkward guy was going to hang around. And they all, for whatever reason, came forward and gave me a lot of their time during a year in their life when they didn't have that much time.
Yeah, indeed, they did give you. They were quite generous with their time. Let's talk about them. In turn, Carlos is super bright. He's a DACA case. And he's already been to a summer program at Brown University, so he's got a taste of what the academic outside world is like.
So as I said, I didn't go to Animo Pep Brown and ask for a kid who was applying to DACA and Ivy League schools at the same time. he sort of came forward on his own. And you wouldn't know either of those things about him from talking because he's very humble. But, he was carrying a lot. It's a lot of pressure to be that kid in a low-income community who's kind of representing not just himself and his family applying to Yale and Harvard, but also representing his neighborhood and society.
Right, trying to prove some things that other members of society assume can't happen. That's a bit of a weight. And when cross town, though, at Beverly Hills High School, we have Owen, who I'm just trying to figure out from the get-go whether he's like the class clown or something. He knows he's supposed to go to a good college, but doesn't seem very focused on it.
That's true. And Owen, I really admire Owen. So his parents are both very successful Hollywood creatives, so very wealthy, hardworking, lives in a big house, privileged, and knows he's privileged. And so you have this kid who's, like you said, kind of the class clown. I don't know if he would characterize himself as that. Maybe he would.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also, you know, having serious thoughts and trying to figure out how to be a decent person in spite of his privilege. And he also knows that very few people are going to take his thoughts seriously because he's a rich kid from Beverly Hills.
Huh. So we were sketching the major characters here, Carlos and Owen we got to first. Now, John, also from Beverly Hills High School, is an academic decathlete, so he's a real hot guy in academic concerns. His parents bought a condo in the Beverly Hills district so he would have a good education.
And so, I mean, if you watched television in the 90s, you probably have an idea of what Beverly Hills High School looks like. when you're there, it's for the most part these families like John's who work pretty hard to live in small apartments specifically so that their kids can go through this public system. And John is one of those kids. So as you mentioned, he's academic decathlete and student government. He kind of manically does all these activities, baseball, which he wasn't particularly good at, but he was passionate about. His mother's Chinese and his father's Jewish, so he kind of lives in this torrent of Eastern shame culture and Western guilt culture. And his year was touching to observe for me, because his year was spent kind of figuring out that a lot of the friction between parents and children actually comes from love.
Yeah, that's a great observation. So let's talk about now Tio, also from Animo Pat Brown Charter High School. Really interesting guy, because he really walks a line between streetwise and book smart. I mean, he's got high grades, but he's a seriously cool guy.
He is pretty cool. And he's a great storyteller, and he's one of my favorite guys, not just in this book, but in general. I'm
mm-hmm.
glad to know him. He mostly talks about skateboarding and arguments he's having with his girlfriend. But in the meantime, with really no parental support, actually the opposite of support, his father was really derisive of his education and education in general, which was sad, and also dealing with alcoholism and all these very difficult adult things. But Tio just wanted to be an engineer, and he wanted to be an engineer because he grew up watching his father tinker and sort of fix neighbors' air conditioning units and toaster ovens and things. And all through high school, he's just, you know, self-determination is the ethos of our country, and it's also the ethos of high school. I mean, every graduation speech I've ever heard has to do with, if you want it, go get it.
Right, yeah, seize the future, seize
the day.
It's a
great motivator, mm-hmm. but, you know, what Tio found and what all these boys found in some way is that those lines are not straight. They're difficult and they're messy, and Yeah, so as the year went along and the college admission process went along, despite the grades he worked for, you know, it was hard, and it didn't work out the way he was told that it would.
I'm really kind of surprised that in this day and age, though, that Tia would get the kinds of messages he was getting from his father. Now, granted, his father was struggling with alcohol addiction and his own set of issues, but what kinds of things was he saying to Tio about where he saw the value of education?
I mean, you know, some of the things are probably not fit for radio consumption, but basic messages, you know, you're never going to get above where we are now, so all this time you're spending and all these hopes you're maintaining are kind of a waste. But I mean, you know, there were some very touching moments that happened between Tio and his dad during that year. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking before Tio kind of organized this dance, he ran this really neat student group about, it was called C3, Caballeros con Cultura. And it had to do with just manhood and what it meant to be a man and be a sensitive man. And he organized this dance. And, you know, all this year, he's just wanting his dad to give him something. Just say, I'm proud of you for that A or in calculus or anything. And he wasn't getting much. And then before this dance, his dad just said, you know, you look nice. I'm proud of you for doing this.
Wow, that's a big thing from Tio's dad,
sure. Yeah, those small moments that I would say form this book.
Jeff Hobbs is the author of the book. It's called Show Them You're Good, A Portrait of Boys in the City of Angels the Year Before College. Jeff is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Now, there were some paved pathways, at least, for some of these guys. I mean, a few of them had siblings who had gone to college before them, right?
Yeah, and very interestingly, Carlos, who we spoke about earlier, who was, you know, he did not speak English when he began elementary school because he grew up in his parents picked fruit in Washington State, kind of almost your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved to South LA when he was in kindergarten. So, you know, first and second grade, he couldn't even interpret. And then 12 years later, he's applying to Ivy League schools. And we've read that story in the newspaper. It's a great, hopeful story. But a little kink with Carlos was that his brother was already at Yale when he was doing this. So, you know, that's a problem we don't often associate with kids from South LA, undocumented kids. So he was sort of living in his brother's shadow and trying to carve his own space at the same time, which was all really, and he did it so quietly. It was interesting.
Now, the school that Tio and Carlos attended itself is something of a step up from standard high school, right? I mean, it is a charter school, and so I mean, what school would they have gone to if they hadn't ended up at Animo Pat Brown?
They would have gone to Fremont, which was about a mile down the road, a big high school, about 3,000 kids. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of this work definitely is not to dump on Fremont or any school or teacher. But so they went to a smallish charter school, about 600 kids, 9 to 12, kind of off the beaten path. Not particularly special. I mean, I think a low enough ratio that teachers kind of knew what was going on with their students and the teachers cared. I do think it's a special place. But basically these kids were there by virtue of their parents filling out a one-page lottery form. So I guess by virtue of that activity, that you know, desire for a little something different, I would say, you know, maybe put them one step up.
All right. Yeah. One step along the path to success a little further, perhaps, than the other high school. And I get what you're saying. You don't want to just say that Fremont High School is not worth it, but they had better opportunities at Animal Pat Brown, it would appear. Jeff Hobbs is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Show Them You're Good, A Portrait of Boys in the City of Angels the Year Before College. It really is a tracking of two boys from Animal Pat Brown Charter High School in the Compton area and two boys from Beverly Hills High School and a bunch of people around them. There's a surrounding cast of characters. And we get a chance to see what it's like to deal with whatever the challenges may be in your own life. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to share a story or ask a question here on the Jefferson Exchange by phone. 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I'm working on the assumption that Beverly Hills High School is rigorous academically, but that's one thing. Is it cool to be smart there is the other thing.
I suppose so. I don't know if I'd call it rigorous.
Really?
I mean, it's a basic public high school. They have a lot more extracurriculars than most schools probably. And, you know, a lot more sort of fundraising and more active parents. So there's a lot of opportunities. For instance, Owen, they have their own radio and TV station and Owen did that. But yeah, I don't know if it's cool to be smart. I think what I found is kids kind of gravitating toward groups where whatever they're doing was what was cool, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
So they were definitely kind of the brainy kids and the class leaders and they were the jocks and all those groupings that, you know, we've all grown up with. So there was nothing particularly, even though it is Beverly Hills, there was, nothing too strange about it.
Right. You mentioned in the book, you just talked about Owen and his news broadcasting stuff. He and his friend Bennett, who's a real good friend, got together to do a school news broadcast, and it actually got them into some competitions. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. I think they did sort of a satirical news show, and these are good friends, as you said, and kind of a special lifelong friendship, and it was a touching part of the book. And also when they left, when they graduated and parted ways was sad, just that part of the passage is that fading away. But one of the things that connected them was these memories, and I think by virtue of being the only high school news team in Los Angeles, they moved through this series of competitions until they were in rural Kentucky for a national student news competition that they kind of had no business being in. So you have these two kids from Beverly Hills kind of wandering around Kentucky looking for stories to tell. They met some interesting people.
Huh. So they couldn't pull the satirical thing at the competition, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, the assignment that they were all given had to do with the Orlando mass shooting.
Oh, yeah.
Which you can't satirize.
No, you can't. But as you point out, too, I mean, you mentioned this is the 16-17 school year, so there are other big real-world issues to talk about at the time you followed these guys. Give us a sense of how the 2016 election campaign was perceived in these worlds of Animo Pat Brown and Beverly Hills High School in the fall of 2016.
So that was a big subject, obviously, and still is. And it was problematic a little bit for me because, I wasn't writing a book about politics or systems, but it was so powerful how these guys experienced what was a very unexpected and very signal moment in the country, no matter your political beliefs. And so you have these kids in South L.A. This school is about 100% Latino. I'm not sure if I've mentioned that. So, Donald Trump had a very specific rhetoric regarding where they come from and what they're capable of. And I remember the night of the election, I was going to go the next day and just spend time and see how things were. And as the results came in, a teacher emailed me and said, maybe don't come tomorrow. It's going to be pretty depressing here. And then he emailed about 5 minutes later and said, actually, just come. You know, you're writing about this and it's important. And so I went expecting that kind of funereal atmosphere. But you know, what I saw was kids with signs around their necks saying free hugs, and Carlos's sign said undocumented and proud. And it wasn't an anger thing. And in fact, when kids, you know, started spouting off, other kids would shush them and, you know, say, we're going to be positive through this. And we're just, their goal became not to be scared. And that was pretty meaningful to watch. And in the meantime, at Beverly Hills, what was sort of interesting about that school is that in a LA being a sanctuary city and Hollywood being kind of a liberal bubble, at Beverly Hills, you do have conservative students and some conservative students who are really smart and thoughtful. And one who's in the book, who I'm really fond of. And what I found is that while the adults in my life were not capable of having a conversation that involved opposing views, mm-hmm. that, you know, didn't reach a very high nonsensical decibel, these kids could actually talk through disagreements, and they could talk through tension in a room and kind of see what another person saw.
That's impressive. And at both high schools, you're saying?
Well, Beverly Hills, in terms of political views,
Beverly Hills had them
way more diverse.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't a lot of disagreement at APB regarding what they thought of the election, but at Beverly Hills, there was. It was powerful for me to be there for that.
Right, that does sound impressive.
Well, if you took a step back and looked at where the country was, it just didn't look hopeful, and these kids gave me hope.
Hmm. So how much time did you spend at the various schools? It sounds like you attended, you know, events, dances, homecoming, et cetera.
I mean, it's odd to tell your children that you're not going to be cooking dinner Friday night because you're going to a Halloween dance at a high school in South L.A. So I went to the dances and the sports and plays, classes. One challenge, I wanted to write a book about schools, but I did not want the reader to feel like they were back in school.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause who wants to do that? But, you know, the meat of the research, I would say, is once or twice a week, I would go to each school with this small group of kids who gave over their time. And we'd just sit in the classroom for usually 2 hours, sometimes three or even four. And we just talk, or mostly they would just talk to each other about what was going on, the big things about their futures and the election, but mostly the small things,
mm-hmm.
family and girlfriends and just making their way through.
How much did you tell each group of the other? I mean, I assume the students at Beverly Hills were aware that you were also over at Animo Pat Brown and vice versa. I mean, did they ever get to meet each other?
You know what? They haven't met still, and I regret that. I tried a few times maybe to situate a barbecue or something just to meet, because they were all very curious about one another.
Mm-hmm.
And just with schedules, and then they went off to college, most of them, and it wasn't, it just never quite panned out. It still could.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they were very curious about what was going on at the other school, and that was something they all kept coming back to. And I would say, I would add that I found the kids at Beverly Hills to be very, I don't think courageous is an exaggeration, just in that they knew that they would be laid alongside kids who had much less than them.
So we were talking about the different students here, and you mentioned the courage of the Beverly Hills High School students, knowing they would be compared and their privilege with the lack of privilege for the folks at Animo Pat Brown. Owen, though, I mean, these are interesting people you ended up finding. Owen, at least early in the book, confused me. I couldn't figure out at Beverly Hills High School if he was the deepest thinker or the shallowest.
I think he wondered that at different points, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he would go on these jags, kind of talking about his own ennui, and then, you know, he'd catch himself and say, you know, I'm not actually experiencing ennui. I know who I am. What I learned of Owen that was very important, and it took a while for him to talk about, and the fact that it did take a while, I think, speaks to this idea of maleness that a lot of this book explores, mm-hmm. sort of what it means to be a man in a what's still a machismo culture that we live in. But his mom was very ill, with kind of a mysterious illness that left her bedridden since mm-hmm. Owen was in eighth grade. So you have this privileged kid who's, you know, kind of trying to figure out his purpose, and, you know, he wants to maybe be an actor, but he doesn't want to be such a cliche because he lives in Beverly Hills and his dad does TV stuff. But, you know, every night when kids leave school and kids go to the mall or whatnot, one thing I was surprised by was that kids actually still go to the mall after school. But besides that, he would go home and just sit next to his mother's bed, and she was very tired and often in a lot of pain, and he would just download his day and try to make her laugh. So, you know, as privileged as he was, he, you know, he knows that life is messy and life is random, and life is not fair.
Mm-hmm. Boy, he had a really interesting observation on all the adults saying, find your passion. He thought it seemed to have the opposite effect when they said that. Something like, yeah, it drained me of passion every time an adult said that. So,
Well, you know, it's one of those things that's just drilled in very hard in school. Again, with the graduation speeches and... because I think we touched on this earlier, he wasn't particularly inspired academically. You know, he felt that spending 6 to 8 hours a day in math class and history class wasn't necessarily pressing those buttons for him, which he knew was kind of a bratty thing to say at the time.
Right. So, how different were the motivational messages at Animo Pat Brown? I mean, given the different life realities for the people who went there.
I mean, all I can really say to that is I've been to, I think at this point, 5 graduation ceremonies for Animo Pat Brown, and I've brought my kids to them, and I sit with the teachers, and I've cried at every single one. Just because it's not even like the overcoming of challenges that that all these kids go through. Not all, but most. It's just the joy of getting that diploma, which, you know, at the end of the day, they know doesn't necessarily change their lives, but it just reframes the way society sees them and the way they see themselves. So I think that's the ethos of the school. I remember talking to one of the history teachers who, you know, has a similar background to a lot of the kids there right after the presidential election. And I was asking if, you know, it was kind of sad teaching them U.S. history during a moment when U.S. history wasn't being very kind to them. And he said it was actually the opposite. It was really inspiring to try to empower these kids.
For the kids at Animal Pat Brown, did the presence of Donald Trump in the White House become something of a constant distraction? I mean, or was it, as you pointed out in the history class, fodder for discussion and debate?
I mean, it was fodder for a lot of impersonations, for sure. And I think it was hard for them to, in the context of a history or a government class with a sympathetic teacher, they're still asked to intellectualize what was, you know, a very visceral, emotional experience, which was hard. And that was one of those times when it seemed like all the kids in school seemed to look to Carlos as kind of the brightest of the bunch to kind of show them how they should be treating the moment.
And how did he think about this, particularly in light of the fact that here's somebody who wanted to and ultimately decided to end a DACA before he even had a chance to apply for that status?
Yeah, that was so complicated. And his father drove a delivery truck, and you know, all the talk during that time and during the time since was about ICE agents kind of rooting out people, and he knew people who'd been, you know, seized and kicked out. And so he has this bright intellect where, you know, he can point to historical patterns and intellectualize it, as I said. But one thing he had to deal with in terms of his own journey, the only thing I would say he really had trouble dealing with was jokes. You know, when kids, especially kids, when they don't understand something or something's particularly hard to wrap their heads around, they tend to make a joke out of it. Daily he just dealt with undocumented jokes, like, you know, if you get into Harvard, do they give you citizenship? A girl, kids do promposals for prom now, which I still don't totally understand,
right, yeah.
But these very elaborate things. And a girl friend of his said, like, America's not taking you as a citizen because I'm taking you to prom. And, you know, it's kids just, again, trying to metabolize and make light of difficult situations. But that was the only time I ever saw him mad and frustrated and at a loss.
Hmm. We're talking again about Jeff Hobbs' book, Show Them You're Good. I haven't explained to the listeners, and at least one has remarked about this, that they're not clear on the title. Show them it's you're good, as in you are. Show them you are good. And
yeah.
was that something that was said to one of the students?
That was something one of the students said, Tio, who we spoke about earlier. His passion was skateboarding.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a frivolous passion, but, you know, that's what he, when he was dealing with his father's drinking and college not working out the way he believed it would, he'd just go to a skate park and sort of get it out that way. In fact, I sort of ran alongside him one morning just to get his route skateboarding to school.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, 7:30 in the morning, on a hot day, I was kind of jogging behind him. He was like, dude, I can walk too. anyway, he was talking about skate parks, and he said, you go, and people are kind of territorial and not very welcoming. And, you know, he said, people just hate on you until you show them you're good.
Huh.
Which, again, he was talking about skateboarding, and it was kind of a light moment, but as I was going through all the transcripts that line stood out as having a lot of layers, because again, these kids are applying to college and projecting themselves outside of their little high school bubbles really for the first time in their lives, and that's all they're trying to do.
And so talk about that. I mean, the pressure increases, obviously, as the senior year wears on and you're getting letters from colleges and all that. So, I mean, What were you there for a lot of those moments for these four young men?
I was there for not all of them, but as many as I could be. And you know, college, it's that timeless moment where you go to school for 12 years and things happen, but you pretty much know what the day is going to look like between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. every day for almost your whole life, and then suddenly you don't know where you're going to be in a year and who you're going to be with and whether you're going to be happy or miserable and how you're going to pay for it. So that's what I was paying attention to, was these kids dealing with all this very sudden uncertainty. And in that context, applying to college, you know, it's all the numbers and financials and all these strategies and tests, but it's really an act of storytelling. Mm-hmm. You know, again, for sort of the first time in their lives, they're telling their own stories and having it be measured against all these hundreds of thousands of other kids. And so you have all these questions of self-worth and all these little regrets about that decimal point in algebra 2 sophomore year, and all these really complicated emotions wrapped up in, you know, what's supposed to be a straightforward process.
So let's see, 17, 18, 19, 20. So would they actually have, some of them have graduated from their undergraduate already?
They're in their senior years now. They just started. And I'll add kind of the most meaningful moment I saw the whole year had to do with college acceptance. Mm-hmm. And again, for Tio, I don't want to give away the ending, but for Tio, it was hard. And for Carlos, it worked out pretty well. And that week when all that information is raining down, they were sitting next to each other and Tio was depressed and kind of almost like parroting his father, just, you know, it means nothing. I don't know why I tried to get A's when I could have gotten C's. And Carlos, you know, there's this huge gap between them as far as their trajectories.
Mm-hmm.
And Carlos knew not to give him platitudes, not to say, like, it's going to be all right, it's on you, things that adults would say.
Right.
Carlos knew just to put his hand on Tio's shoulder, mm-hmm, and hang his head next to him and let there be a little silence.
Jeff, I have to ask in the last minute we have here about a New York Times reviewer who seemed to get a cramp from you, including the Beverly Hills Boys, at all, that this could have been a fine book just with the following the boys through Animo Pat Brown Charter High School. How did that comment strike you?
I mean, I was a little grumpy about it, mainly because I think that comment spoke to exactly the thing I was in some way trying to remedy, you know, kind of categorizing a whole group by, you know, the square mile that they live in and mm-hmm, what their parents earn. You know, reviewers can, you know, it's their right to do their own thing. So I guess I felt bad for the boys at Beverly Hills after, mm-hmm, again, all that time just speaking pretty powerfully about their own experience and their families to just get categorized as rich kids.
It is a fascinating book, and you really do get a sense of the challenges they face. And you get you're challenged as your senior in high school, no matter who you are. And so that's what we get to learn here about two very different high schools in the L.A. Basin. The book is called Show Them You're Good, A Portrait of Boys in the City of Angels, The Year Before College. It's the work of Jeff Hobbs. Jeff, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Sir, thank you so much for this conversation.
All right.
It means a lot.
A pleasure.